You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1, powered by Rust-Oleum, home of trusted quality and powerful solutions since 1921. If you've got a surface to protect or a look you want to transform, home or industry, Rust-Oleum has a solution for every challenge.
Well, we've got some housekeeping to take care of here out of the gate because France has won this afternoon. So yes. Shout out to the French and shout out to the O-Dog and his pool. And I guess he's up some money here because he won that. But then he dumps it right back in because my boy Yogi Low was scratching and sniffing and having himself a great time on the sidelines. So
couldn't stop himself, could he? Yeah.
He just can't. I told you that. You were adamant that this guy would stop for some reason. He can't stop. On the sideline.
Somebody tweeted it out. Just the pick and a double, the comment, double barrel. I had to retweet it. I'm like, that's a double barrel.
He is taking a giant pull there. That is a giant, giant. That's a gold dust sniff.
That's a gold dust. Yeah, that's Snoop Dogg's tour bus in about 1997, 98. Yeah. Willie Nelson's in there, and there's a lot going on, and the boys are up to no good. And ultimately, that's all that matters. You know, I don't care if France wins or Germany wins or who loses. It's totally irrelevant to me. When I'm looking for the content for this show, I'm thinking Yogi Low. And that's it. And he had his A game on today because there's a shot of him. I don't know if you guys saw it. He is doing some work.
In the front.
At the front. Yeah. He's at the front, and he's moving things around. And it's just an outrageous maneuver.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough, certainly, about soccer, but is he a good coach? Like, a good man? Like, because he's a walking, like, PR nightmare.
Guys, like, don't you think, this was my reasoning when I talked about this guy. Don't you think there would have been a PR meeting with Yogi, my guy, and somebody would have said, you have been caught on multiple occasions with your hands in your pants and then sticking both of your fingers up of your nose and smelling it. Can you maybe, it's the Euros, don't do it this year. Stop it. The grossest one was when he went downtown, bought like barn door, and then he rolled something up.
This guy's got every trick.
He did. I remember.
He just comes up and it's like a guy that picks his nose in the car and you catch him rolling it up and gently placing it on the floor.
He's got every move. He does. Every move. He knows what's up.
You have to know. I mean, we have lots of friends at TSN that are directors and producers that run the camera. Can you imagine in the truck, if you have access to 12 cameras, you know maybe one or two of them are set on this guy the whole time.
The whole
game. What would a guy like Chris Edwards say? Like, do not take that camera off his fingertips?
Eddie or Franklin, both of those guys, whether they're producing or directing, would say, okay, we don't have 12 cameras. We have 10 tonight to catch the play because we've got two from multiple angles for this guy.
Isolated on Yogi Low. I think that has to be the case. I think we need fingertips, analytics, expected sniff, and we need all that kind of stuff. We need the full, rundown of what this guy's up to on the sideline.
Expected sniffs.
The expected sniff rate for Yogi Low. And when they play again in a few days, we'll be tracking it once more. And this is where you come for post-match material. Forget anywhere else. No one else can break down a game like we do. No one else can bring the heat. BBC Live. Who wants to listen to that? Break down the midfield of these two teams and how the keepers played and another own goal. Nobody cares. Everyone wants to know about Yogi Low and the sniff rate and expected sniff.
And the quickness from barn door to nostrils.
I know, but if we ever have like Luke Wildman or Stephen Caldwell on, like, I wonder if these guys have ever crossed paths in their career with him.
Absolutely. And, he's been a lifer noodles. He's been around forever.
What is the routine? Is it fist bump because you know that
that guy will never shake another hand the rest of the time he walks this earth.
I think it's the bow. I think you take you go with a bow for Yogi Low. It's nice to see you and you move on with your day. So we'll get into that more later this afternoon. We got a lot to get into. Rays off today. Mike Johnson will join us. We'll get into the Habs-Vegas game last night. Yeah. Jays are back home against the Yankees. Ryu is on the mound. He's had a couple of tough outings recently, so you're looking for him to get back at it tonight. Manoah had himself an outing, man. Like, at Fenway, for him to pitch that well, and of course the bats do not come alive.
No.
Vladdy goes legend in the ninth. And I've been thinking about this all day, and I've been talking with Blue Jay fans, and, oh, you and I, we were out on the course talking about it today. Last night it was a situation, heart of the lineup for the Sox. Everyone's yelling, Romano, Romano, Romano. All that did was isolate the fact that there was one guy that anyone has confidence in the bullpen, and it's a guy who has injury issues, who is very rarely at 100%. But let's say Romano pitches in the ninth, and they get out of it clean. At some point, you got to get three outs from someone else. Right. Like, at some point, Dolis is coming in, whether it's in the ninth, the 10th, the 11th. You have to go to someone else not named Jordan Romano to get you some outs. And that was clear last night. So, yeah, could you have pitched Romano in the ninth? Sure. Maybe he gets through the heart of the lineup. Maybe he doesn't. But at some point, Dolis is coming in, and he's got to be better than he was last night. And the defense has to help.
And it's really flipped the switch. Remember that first series in New York? All I could talk about was their pen saying, this is so dialed in right now. I was comparing it to the Indians' bullpen back in the day. It was like, just this is just a 5 or 6 inning game, and let these guys just destroy people. And now all they're talking about, now we're talking about in a completely different fashion.
They have one guy.
Right.
Yes.
One guy they trust.
What is Merriweather's status?
He's off the IL. He's through 60 days, but he's not coming back probably for another couple of weeks. And how can you trust him? He's hurt all the time as well.
Yeah,
right. I mean, you got to pitch him, but you're kind of holding your breath.
Romano, he's the deep knee bend guy, correct?
Yes, very deep, deep, Yogi Low deep.
It is. It's really deep, and it's really awkward. Like, it's actually distracting watching him, like, because that's a routine. Like,
oh, that's his windup. That's him out of the stretch.
But it is such a – it's an aggressive play. Mm-hmm. Like, I know we all sitting on our couches. Like, I don't think I could actually do that delivery once. This guy has to do it a bunch of times.
Every single time. He's getting a full, like, squat workout every time he's on the mound for every pitch. And that's relief pitchers, man. Over the history of baseball, if you have a goofy windup, you're in the pen. Like, you just can't do it for 6 or 7 innings straight every fifth day. Like, there's the occasional starter that's got wonky mechanics. It's not really mechanics. It's just the way that he gets set,
It's such a weird – like, I know he must talk about it all the time, or people must ask him. That's just his routine. I remember,
setup.
You know, I think Oil Can Boyd had, like, a very unique windup. I think there's sidearm guys. There was one guy who was, like, sidearm almost in the dirt, mm-hmm. bringing it out. Like, however you deliver it, great. But watching him distracts me. I don't know why. It's weird. I get agitated watching him.
I think it probably throws off batters a little bit, too. But whatever makes you comfortable and whatever you can repeat, it's like a golf swing.
Right.
You can repeat the golf swing. You go with it,
wow.
And sometimes it's not there early in a round, but it shows up later in the round,
well,
and that's all that matters.
What was the tweet all about? What happened? How did it go today?
Go ahead, Hayes. You apparently have some information you would like to share first.
Well, I'm going to lay a couple things on the line here.
Okay.
My day, I was comfortable. I was breathing easy after this guy's first shot because I saw him do something I've never seen him do before.
He scored.
I cold top one. It went 20 feet off.
20
the first
feet
tee.
Off the tee. Topped
in, into the gunch.
Into
garbage.
Like gone. I don't even think he looked for it. He was so embarrassed. Did you look for that ball or did you
I found it, yes.
Okay, you did find it.
Yeah.
But I will give him credit. I've never seen anyone putt the way he putted today. I'm not kidding you. This guy that's the greatest putting performance I've ever seen. Through 12 holes, this guy had 13 putts.
Wow.
13. I'm not kidding you either. This guy was, I don't know what you shot. You must have been a 70 or were you a 69?
No, I was one over. And it was like British Open. I was Tiger at the British Open that's in 1990.
That's the best I've
like
seen you play.
Strutting?
Dude. The wind was crazy.
Noodles. Here's the thing. It's windy as hell.
Yeah.
And this guy on your right, this is what he pulls today. Okay. I'm thinking, I'm on the range. I don't see any sign of him. So I'm thinking, okay, possibly this guy's game's dialed in. This guy starts launching Scud missiles 5 feet off of the ground, and they do not, go away.
Yeah.
So I morph into Tiger Woods at the British Open, and I handle this match.
Because we're a team. It's the two of us against our buddy Jeff DeLine and Don Nichols. We're playing the two of them.
Okay. Yeah. These guys are heavy hitters. They're cool dudes. And I'm like, this guy is Greg Norman on the back nine at Augusta, and I have to pull my weight right now.
Yeah.
And I go full Tiger Woods. The match gets closed out with like five holes left. This guy turns into Ernie Els at the South African Open, and then he starts strutting around.
I was so dialed in down the stretch, Noodles.
This guy starts hitting it like a tour pro, and I'm like, oh, wow, that was great stuff. And he's like, yeah, you know, it comes around every – I'm like, you were nowhere to be found for 14 holes.
Honestly, the first 10 holes, I was awful, like actually horrendous. Topping balls, chili dipping shots, chunking every chip.
Oh.
Like, it was pathetic. Like, and this is what I did last week with Tucker. I told you that. I was teammates with Tux. That was me for 18 holes. I was for 18. I never got it on the rails. It was so disgusting.
How was the attitude in the first 10 holes? How was the attitude?
Well,
he
was happy because he was playing so well. He didn't care. Listen, that's the truth, Noodles. If you're playing well, you don't really care what anyone else is doing. And this guy was so dialed in.
Dude, we were a team. I had to be dialed in.
You were dialed in.
If I was started slapping it around anything like you did, we would not have had a chance.
I would have been giving you attitude because I needed you to pull the weight, and you did.
Okay,
but as of the, I think, 12th hole, from 12 in, so the final seven holes, I was one over. And that's including a bogey on 18 where I let one get away.
Imagine this guy having the nerve to give that stat.
That's
the match
truth.
Is over,
that's
and this guy's
truth.
Talking about how he's dialed in.
I ended up shooting an 84. I was so good on the back. I was shot an 84. What did I call yesterday that I'd shoot an 83?
That's
what did I say
good.
Yesterday?
I'll say.
I shot 44-40. And 44 was a little bit, you know, I picked up some putts that were 7 or 8 feet because you were already in. So, a little bit deceptive. Go ahead, Noodles.
And, you were a 73, and you were shooting it like Tiger. You were all over it.
Dude, it was windy as hell, man. It was British. Ask the two guys.
Conditions.
Sure the two guys that we were playing against.
Right.
I'm not just pumping my own tires. They would agree.
Yeah, the conditions and the pins were the toughest pins you could possibly play, and the conditions were insane. It was so windy. I think a lot of that was the issue with me, the conditions. I was trying to play, hit stingers, and they just weren't getting up high enough. I was trying to move the ball around, and it just didn't. The conditions were a little bit difficult with that. But
how are you talking about stingers and moving the ball around?
Poor Johnny's got to listen to Hayes, and it's like thinking that he's going to dial in and move stingers and move the ball around. You're just hoping for the best shot, period.
It is such a chop thing to say that I was one over on the final seven holes. A little bit. You know, there's some context needed there for the rest of the round, but
yes.
I'm happy with my scorecard at the end, and my team won. That's all that matters. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our TSN hockey analyst, Mike Johnson. What's up, Johnny?
Is it really all that matters when you check it or when you hack it around, even though you win? Like, are you really that happy with the win?
No,
when you chop it up for half the round, then you fill it up in garbage time, that's like piling up points in the last 4 minutes of a basketball game. That's a 30-point blowout.
That's
Johnny,
exactly what it
Johnny,
was.
Johnny, you would have thought this guy won the club C's when the most irrelevant seven holes of his life, he turns into Tom Watson, and he's dialed
and
in.
And I was
hitting,
strutting around, too, wasn't I? I had the tight pants on this morning.
Oh, look gorgeous, and he was just like a tour pro. I'm like, this is the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it was outrageous.
I could see the immediate peacocking going on as soon as you make that first good shot on 12. You're like, okay, I'm back, baby.
That's right.
Here he comes.
That was it,
like,
Johnny.
We're no longer keeping score. The match is actually
literally
open,
no one
sure,
cared
have
anymore.
At it.
No one was
not
paying
one
attention,
time,
no one
Johnny.
Cared.
Here's the thing: not one time does he ever say like, "Man, you like." One time he said to me like, "I carried us like the whole match," and one time he goes, "Man, you're putting good today." Not even anything like way to go, dog. Like, keep us going here. One time he goes, you're putting good today. I'm like, this guy has got a screw loose right now.
I didn't want to jinx you. The conditions were throwing me off. Bad conditions. Bad conditions.
You know what, Hayes? I think you and I are about the same level of golfer, somewhere around each other. And I got to tell you, when it gets really windy, I get the same way where I think, oh, I'm gonna cut this one back in the wind, or I'm gonna draw this one high. I'm like, who am I kidding? I can't do any of those things, but I feel like I want to or have to, and I never can pull it off.
No, it's
so I can empathize.
I multiple times I'm like, I'm just gonna try to keep this one low. Like, what the hell do I think of? I got a wedge in my hand. Like, I can do that. Anyway, Johnny, the Habs are. I feel like I have a different viewpoint of some people, which might surprise people in Montreal who think I hate the Habs. I loved their first period last night.
I agree.
I thought they were outstanding in the first.
They looked really good. If they get a goal early on.
That's the problem, though, Noodles, is like they get to the first intermission, they're down 1-0, and then they run into penalty troubles, and then the game was over. And when Caulfield scored, for them to give up a third that quickly, it was over. Like, see you later, pack your bags. The third was irrelevant. But if I'm Ducharme today, Johnny, I'm watching the first. I thought they were physical. I thought they were agitating. I thought they were forechecking. I thought they were in it, and I know it's 20 minutes of a 60-minute game, but glass half full. If I'm Montreal, I'm looking at the first period and saying, if we can do that more often and score first, easier said than done, you might be able to stay in some of these games.
Yeah, so that's an if, then you might be able to stay in the game. I mean, that's hardly a ringing endorsement after game one, and I'll give you 12 minutes of the first period. I thought they were clearly the better team to start, the chance a minute into Gallagher, the Josh Anderson wide drive, all that traffic around in front. Scrumming it up around Marc-Andre Fleury, all really good. And we can talk about the goals against and, you know, a misplay on the faceoff and a screen that wasn't blocked out by Gustafsson, who wouldn't be on the ice if it wasn't, unless it was an icing for a defensive zone faceoff. You got Sherratt jumping out of the box and racing back into his own end, thinking he's playing defense. We should just stand there playing left wing. And then Martinez goals doesn't go in. Like, those are things you can clean up. And that's not that hard to see Montreal doing that. My bigger concern would be, if I'm a fan of the Montreal Canadiens, is the middle, whatever, from the 10-minute mark until about 10 minutes left in the game, those 40 minutes, how are we going to create more offense? I can clean up the defensive side of things, although Petrie's injury and Shea Weber's wrist aggravation is not going to help at all. But I think you can clean that up with just, you know, a little bit better attention to detail. But creating offense, like, they didn't create very much in those middle 40 minutes. And that, to me, is going to be a bigger challenge. Everyone thinks about the forecheck and the pace of Vegas, but they're also a very good defensive team. And that's my greater concern. I don't have as easy an answer for the offense as I do for cleaning up the defensive miscues.
Yeah, you make a great point, Johnny. I don't know if we've given Vegas's D enough love or credit. Like,
how do you not? They dominate games.
I know, and I, like, obviously, because it was on such display last night. Like, we talk about Shea Theodore, but do we really talk about him? You know what I mean? Like,
you watched them last night. Those two, that one play he made to Martinez was
ridiculous,
unbelievable,
ridiculous.
So
like,
good.
I'm on my couch and I bit. You know, Carey Price is like, I'm like, oh my God, he's got a one timer in the slot. And it was just such a fantastic play. But Pietrangelo, like, he is so good, and just everything he does, and Martinez, and Holden's a big, strong guy. Like, when I look at Vegas, and you're right, I thought it was over kind of after the first period, but their D are really skilled, and they get involved, and that's something that, you know, if you want to talk about in-game adjustments or at least adjustments after a game, I would think, is there anything that the forwards are, you know, I was looking at, there is some missed assignments last night, set plays off of draws, but is there something that the forwards could do to try and maybe limit that D being involved that much?
Well, I mean, I suppose you can try to match up against them more, a little closer in the defensive zone, but
tighter.
And I didn't think they did that bad of a job. I mean, it was two plays off faceoffs, which don't usually go in, and it was one scramble play on the great shot fake by Theodore out of a penalty box, as the penalty was expiring. So, like, you know, it sounds like it's a lot, but it wasn't that much. And then another long cycle play where it ends up on Holden's stick. So I don't know if you're going to put that on the forwards. I think that's going to be a problem for Montreal the whole series, is how do they stop the cycle? I mean, Vegas, I think, is second in the playoff in offensive zone time per game. And that's why. Like, they get on the forecheck, they sustain it, they make you work, and then they eventually break you down. And whether it's the defenseman breaking down, then the forward covers for the defenseman, which leaves the defenseman that he was supposed to cover open, and on it goes. That's kind of what happened. And I mean, the biggest thing Montreal can do is hope for good health for Jeff Petrie and maybe in Shea Weber, which I'm not sure is going to happen in the next 24 hours. So I don't think there's a whole bunch they could do. I think they, if anything, they're going to have to try to figure out, again, easier said than done, how to navigate your way through the neutral zone. They did it for the first 7-8 minutes, but they didn't do it after that very much. And if you can't skate with speed and pass the puck up the ice, you're not going to get to play in the offensive zone very much. And unless they are able to do more of that, then you give any team enough time in the offensive zone, they eventually will break you down, and Vegas did that last night.
Johnny, we both played right wing, and you go through different phases where you're skating, not much is happening, you're not skating, some things are happening, you're total garbage. There's all different kind of phases. When I watch Anderson play for the Canadiens, he scored game one against the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I thought this guy's going to go on a tear, and I don't think he's scored since. Where do you see his game? I know he's a big physical guy, and he did get in there on the forecheck a couple times, but he's got to be a factor for these guys if they're going to have any chance.
Yeah, and probably a tough comparison because Alex Tuch is such a big factor who plays a similar kind of role in a similar kind of style. Yeah. The thing about Josh Anderson, when you watch him close, though, is that he is unbelievably fast in a straight line. So he's very good off the rush. But we just talked about, if you don't get it through the neutral zone with speed to him, he rarely scores goals in the offensive zone. And you think a big guy like that on the forecheck in front of the net, he might be able to do a little something in the offensive zone off cycle. I mean, I called half their games this year. It just doesn't happen for him. He just doesn't have that kind of offensive game. Not a great feel and vision with the puck. He's a straight line guy.
That's shocking, Johnny, because he should be just, it's my simple recipe was get in there, hit, get the puck behind the net, or get it to my winger who can get it behind the net to the centerman and right to the slot. It's just such an easy recipe.
It's not his game. Like, he can go in there and hit, and he does that, and he will do that. But he just doesn't have a great feel. Like, oh, you were really good at getting open. Even though it was subtle, you weren't skating all over the ice, you're very good at getting open. He's not. Like, that is just not his. Like, if it's right in front of him, he sees it. If it's not right in front of him, it's not necessarily there as much. So that's kind of been the story of his offensive game in his NHL career. He still could be effective, but he just doesn't show a lot unless it's off the rush. And whereas Alex Tuch, I think, is as good a third liner as there is in the league.
$925,000.
Wow, and they got him on as a side deal.
It was a throw-in where Eric Howla was the guy that really were grabbing.
Dumba. Yeah. Like, what are we doing here? It was crazy what they got out of him.
That's a 30 for 30, man, that whole thing.
Yeah, that expansion draft.
I was talking to my wife about it last night because we were sitting there watching, and she doesn't follow us closely, and she's like, how are they this good? And I honestly said to her, they perfected the expansion draft. They perfected the rules that were applied to them. I mean, to be fair, Columbus didn't get these. Minnesota didn't get these. San Jose, Ottawa, they didn't get the same rules. Like, Vegas had different rules than the previous expansion teams.
But
they
absolutely perfected it. You've got to give Kelly McCrimmon, Hayes, a ton of credit because he scoured the NHL for that whole year and watched every player, and he got the job done.
Did a remarkable job. And you know what stands out more than anything last night? And this has been clear with them really since day one. They are massive as a team. Like, they are massive. Like, look at their defense corps. The smallest defenseman they have, based on pound for pound, is Shea Theodore. He's 6'2", 195. And he's the best defenseman. He's better than Petrangelo now.
And he looks 6'5 out there.
He looks like a monster. You've got Holden, 6'4", 215. Martinez is 6'1", 210. McNabb, 6'4", 215. Petro, 6'3", 210. Whitecloud, 6'2", 210. Like, these guys are monsters. Tuck is a monster. That Carrier is a monster.
Well, his head is the size of a – he looks like a mascot out there, his head.
He's huge. Ryan Reeves, his size is almost irrelevant because he blends in with the rest of the team. Like, they are huge, and they can play, and they play with a system, and then when anything breaks down, they've got a goalie in net who's more than capable of standing on his head if he has to. But that's what stood out to me last night. I'll bet you a lot of people in this country were thinking the same thing if you were watching for the first time in a while. That Vegas team is massive. They're massive. Well, and Stone's big. They just they lean on you, man. They play heavy.
They do. And, I mean, you watch them play, and they can play fast, and they can play – they can beat you any kind of way you want. You know, whatever game you choose you want to go, you want to play fast and skilled, well, go ahead. They got a lot of that. You want to play heavy and greasy, they got a lot of that. And again, I remember back to when they first – you know, George McPhee was their GM. And George McPhee was not a big guy, but boy, he's an uber tough guy when he played. And I think he knew, we're going into Vegas. We got to be entertaining. Even if we don't win, we got to be entertaining, which means we got to be physical. We got to be, you know, in your face and hopefully also good with the puck. And you put all that together and they're really good. Like Braden McNabb, you know, we watch him play LA without that supporting cast around him. He sometimes would get, you know, he'd get exploited a little bit. But you put him with that team and all those partners, and like, he's a crusher out there, hammering guys. So yeah, it's a tough matchup. And I think, wasn't Vegas first in the league? Like, I mean, they were tied with Colorado, essentially
the
best team in the league.
Yeah,
we probably should be giving them plenty of credit, as they were essentially the best team in the league this year.
Don't we always seem to be getting back to that, Johnny? And I know you dive into the numbers, but we were talking about it the other day. Other than Chicago winning the Cups with kind of not really monster lineups, it's a lot of the monster lineups. So the team I played against that had the skill and you couldn't get the puck off them was Detroit, that ultimately beat us in the finals. So can the small skilled team, or does the skilled team ever come close to beating the big, strong, and fast?
Well, I mean, Tampa won last year. I mean, they're pretty skilled. I don't know if they're small, but
their D-men are monsters too.
Hedman's no slouch, or Sergachev or Savard or McDonough, but their forwards are not a big, burly group of guys. But yeah, I mean, if you're, I think a universal truth remains in just about every sport. Like, I like speed and skill over big and slow. But if you can give me speed and skill and big, I prefer that over speed and skill and little.
Right.
And so I think that's kind of where it is for Vegas, is that, yeah, they're big, but they're also really good. I mean, they have two of what Team Canada's top four at next year's Olympics playing on defense. I mean, think about that. Between Theodore and Pietrangelo, two of the best four defensemen on Canada's Olympic team next year play for them. I mean, like, that's it's not quite Pronger, Niedermeyer with Anaheim, but it's, you know, that's what two great defensemen can do for a group around them. So it's a tough matchup. A lot of things are going to have to happen right for Montreal to get through this game, this series.
The save that Price made on Mark Stone,
That
play, but the funny thing is I love the save. Mark Stone trying to get to top speed I'm tired watching him. It is one of the ugliest sights. And believe me, I love him absolutely love him as a player.
We watched
him in Ottawa night in and night out, and he is as competitive and he's an animal out there. But that play in the neutral zone, I'm like, he's going to get caught. Well, no, he found a way to get open, found a way to get the shot off, and then Price makes that save. But I laughed about it because I was tired watching Stone make that play, and he's such a great player. Just talk about that. There's so many skilled players on that Vegas, but it's not that superstar, crazy, you know, top five player in the National Hockey League. But there's a lot of guys that we just don't give a lot of credit to, and Stone's another one.
Yeah, but I think you said the pivotal phrase though. He didn't get caught. I mean, think about the overtime goal against Colorado.
Yeah.
You have two defensemen chasing him down, and he's chugging and he's huffing and puffing. You're like, is he ever going to get there? But he gets a shot off, and there's no stick even touching him. Like, he's functionally fast, even though he's awful to look at. I would never tell him, you know, teach a kid skate like this guy, but he gets to where he has to go almost all the time, and he keeps in front of people, which I'm not even sure how, because, you know, Noodles, we're right beside him. You're like, this guy skates deep in the ice. He's like, he works to get to where he's going.
Yeah.
But they have such a great blend. That first line, Stone and Pacioretty are a really nice complement pair of a guy who does everything in Mark Stone, and is a passer first, and a guy who's just a goal scorer and a burner and can shoot really, really well. And then it allows that, what do they call them, the misfit line. It's hard to remember all the names of all these lines nowadays, which I'm not so sure about. But the second line with William Karlsson, Smith, and Marshall, so it lets them go do their thing and just play and don't have to worry about checking against Nathan MacKinnon. They don't have to worry about taking the other team's first pairs. And all of a sudden, you got William Karlsson leading the team in scoring. And I think, Marchessault leads the team in goals. Like, they are carrying them offensively. And I've said it many times. I think Alex Tuck, if he played in Toronto, people would be falling all over themselves how good this guy is. They'd be calling the next coming of Eric Lindros. He's not. But, like, he is as fast as anybody in the NHL. I think he might be the best third-line player in the NHL because he never plays in the top six. and he just devours that worst competition he goes up against. They're good. They're deep. They're tough. They got Janmark on there now as a guy who was picked up at the deadline. They do a really good job rolling over lines. They have a deep team, and even in net, they're deep. I mean, they got a guy who could be a Vezina winner backing up a guy who's a Vezina finalist. So, I mean, you're not going to find a lot of weaknesses, and that's Montreal's challenge. And the other great disappointment in last night's game for Montreal was that it'd be one thing if Carey Price wasn't brilliant. You're like, well, you know, maybe Carey gets a bit better, a little cleaner, and he steals a game. He kind of stole, what, 3 goals probably last night that should have gone in, and he didn't let them get in. Like, he was not bad in that last night's game, and they still kind of lost comfortably.
Yeah. Yeah. That is concerning. Ultimately, his effort becomes irrelevant because you're lost. But the stop on Stone, the cross ice to Marchessault was an unbelievable save. And the tip at the end of the second period was sneaky.
How about that pump fake from Theodore? That was outrageous.
Unreal, man. Like, unreal.
I'm telling you, you watch that. I watched it 7 times going back. I'm convinced he was not passing that puck until he was halfway through his downswing. Like, that was Tiger Woods hearing a bird chirp mid downswing where he just jacked on the brakes. It's like, oh, something else is happening here. Like, I think he was so, it was such a good fake because he wasn't faking. Like, I think he
was
getting ready to shoot
the
puck.
That's why the play was so brilliant. It was just like a last second pause, and it's like, no, and it's like, man, that's just as good as it gets. That's just a hell of a play for that
kid. It sold the whole building, man. And credit Martinez for still being ready, because that it would have been easy for him to say either, you know, fall
check,
back.
Please, I'm changing.
Or go, yeah, exactly. You know, head to the net thinking I'm looking rebound or whatever. And not only did he get it off, he put it in. All right, Johnny, we'll leave it there. Enjoy the game tonight, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
All right, boys. Have a good day.
There's Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They take away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Find out more at MapleToyota.com. Yeah, the Habs, I really thought they had a great first, and then after that, it got away from them. But listen, they're playing with fire when it becomes pretty evident that they have to play with a lead.
Dude, you know, that's a ridiculous. If you say, oh, we can only win if we score first.
Well, when have they done it? They haven't proven they can. They didn't like games
then
2,
you're,
3,
then you're
four,
just out of your league and you shouldn't be there then. Sorry.
Well, they might not be. They might be gone in 3 games. Like, they might be. Like, this is what
I
we talked about.
I think that's highly likely, yes.
Well, we talked about
they're not
about
digging
this.
Out of this one. They're not digging out of this
I
one.
Don't...
They've got to win tomorrow night, or they're not taking 4 or 5 from that hockey team. I'm sorry. They did it against the Leafs. They swept Winnipeg. They're not getting away with it against that team.
I don't see it either. And I didn't see it before the game last night. All of us picked Vegas. The whole world picks Vegas, right? Like, Vegas is better, period.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're Montreal, you can't allow one game to just seep into your head. You got to get out of it.
And that's the one thing that I'm curious to see is where the adjustments come. You know, are they going to get Petrie back? Are they going to insert, you know, move some players around? Is Evans going to – not that Evans is game breaker or anything, but it just, you know, they might have a different look. Like
minor details, Noodles. They need Josh Anderson to play out of his ass. Brendan Gallagher, Toffoli. They need guys to have the games of their life.
Weber better not be injured, because that he was wincing last night. Like, he didn't look good, and he's been dealing with the wrist, right, or hand or something. He didn't look comfortable last night. So they need everything. Like, really, they need everything. They need Price to stand on his head and steal a couple of games. Steal. And then beyond that, you need your whole lineup to play best possible hockey you can play 4 times.
Yep. That's why you're in the Final Four. You've got to find a way to do it. That's why I'm curious to see if they have adjustments and if they can do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, we'll find out. Listen, Tampa's talking about that right now. Tampa's up against it tonight. They got to get a win. They don't want to go back to Nassau Coliseum down 2-0.
No, sir.
You got to win tonight if you're Tampa. Our buddy Jack Armstrong on your boys Brooklyn Nets playing tonight. James Harden, it looks like he's trying to will himself back into the lineup.
I told you, my guys, they've got the heart of the lion.
We'll see about that. I sense an Anthony Davis move tonight. Harden playing hero, plays for like 4 or 5 minutes, pulls the pin, and it goes south on them. But we'll catch up with Jack a little bit later on. Jay's back in action tonight. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, cannot confirm or deny what we'll be getting to in about 25 minutes. I can't confirm our boy Jack Armstrong will join us and get his take on the Jays back in Buffalo playing the Yankees. I would think this would be a series where it may not feel like a home crowd tonight. and over the next few nights. A lot of Yankee fans, I'm sure, will be traveling. A lot of Yankee fans likely live in Buffalo. And this might be a pro-Yankee crowd. That's what comes with being on the other side of the border, not playing at your true home. But the Jays take 2 of 4 in Boston, and Ryu back on the mound tonight. So Biggio not in the lineup either. He had a tough night defensively last night. He's coming off injury, though. This might have been the plan anyway. That's what Montoyo, I'm sure, will say.
Vladdy, monster mode. Monster mode.
Crazy.
And I think to really get the recognition, Hayes, there's so many games in MLB, but sometimes you roll into a town like Boston and you put up a series like that, you really, really get everyone's attention, right?
Yeah.
That's not Kansas City. That's not Arizona. That's the Boston Red Sox, and he went in there and just got it done. All of a sudden, everybody around MLB, not just Scotty Mitch and Toronto people. It's like the whole league is like, okay, this is actually for real.
Everyone's paying attention. Yeah, everyone's paying attention. And there's a chance he could be even better and more locked in because of these new rules that Major League Baseball is going to put in place, trying to, you know, basically lock out foreign substance.
Dude, I give up on everything being clean. And I, for years and years, I watched A-Rod and I said, I'm thank God that this guy's finally clean. This guy's like a natural. He's Roy Hobbs the natural. Sure enough, he gets busted. The pitchers are using the sticky tack. They're always, it's so competitive, there are always going to be somebody doing something greasy, man. Somebody's going to come up with something, the sticky tack, that just doesn't get diagnosed or it's untraceable or something. They're going to cheat.
Yeah, you're right. Everyone's looking for a cutting edge.
Garbage bins and heartbeat monitors, like, they don't stop.
It's always going to happen. You're right. It's always going to happen in baseball. It always has. Like, there's always been some element of cheating. It's whether or not it's been accepted or whether or not you can convince the world that it's cheating for the right reason. And what Major League Baseball is going to implement here, about halfway through the season, a third of the way into the season, is if you get caught with a foreign substance, you're suspended for 10 games with pay. So that means the PA can't fight you on it. Basically, you just got to chew on it. So we'll keep paying you, but you're out of the rotation for potentially 2 tours through the rotation. If it's a starter, more than that, clearly. If it's a bullpen arm. I don't know if that's going to be enough to truly deter everyone in baseball, but it might be enough to spook enough of them. And the question becomes whether or not this is actually going to be a good thing for the batters in terms of their safety, because there are three schools of thought right now. Clearly, there are a lot of pitchers, and you hear from guys that are in the game, guys who have been around the game for a long time. Some
They're not
going
to be able to control 100 miles an hour.
Right, but some will say that every pitcher throughout history, like 90, 95% of pitchers have been using something at some point simply for grip, right? Simply for grip. The problem is some of them are using the spider tack or whatever it's called. They're weaponizing this, right? Like they're getting more spin rate. They're throwing balls that have never been seen before in baseball. They're not doing it to protect the batter. They're doing it to penalize the batter based on how they can pitch. But there are some batters through baseball, Josh Donaldson being at the forefront, who think it's illegal, who are on a crusade, who are calling out guys individually like Gerrit Cole and others. And then there are guys like Pete Alonso with the Mets who's like, use it because I want you to have grip.
Who's
I don't care if you throw a spin rate. I want
ball that was delivering it to everybody. I read a piece. Like he was just ratting out everyone, saying this guy's calling me for it, that guy's calling for me, and he's claiming to be the fall guy now.
Right.
Some guy's buddy something or other.
Would you – like, I've always wondered this. What does it matter? Like, if a guy's on the sauce, like, I would much rather watch a guy nail 70 dingers out of a building – then, you know, and the problem is I'm not going to, like, health-wise, that's his choice to take it.
It's his body. Right?
It's his body, whatever. But, like, I would much rather, like, not have any rules that way. Go ahead. You want to be on the sauce.
I was always a big believer, Jamie, be on the sauce. You still got to hit it out of the park.
Exactly. You got to go and nail it out of the park. If you want, you know, a pitcher to have some type of movement, go ahead. Because I'm all sauced up, I'll knock the skin right off the ball.
Well,
like I would much rather have no rules. Like go ahead and let's see how the chips fall. Because I get it within the lines of reason. But I mean, where is that line?
That's the question. Where is that line? And another question that I think is going to be on display here is how diligent is Major League Baseball actually going to be? How hard are they going to go after these guys? Like they said today, the report, that they might check a guy upwards of 10 times in the same game. Who's going to do that? What umpire is going to stop Garrett Cole 10 times to check his fingers, to check
that's
the ball?
That's an obscene. That's
it's just,
ridiculous.
It's no impossible to believe that that's going to happen. So are you really trying to outlaw this? Are you really that disturbed by it? Because this kind of feels like a half-pregnant motion here.
Right.
Like 10 games? Like if you hate it and you really believe that it is truly a detriment to the game and the sport, and it may be because batting average was way down, hits, home runs way down, action period in the game way down earlier in the season, okay, then be more punitive. But then do you really want that? Are they actually really going to penalize this, or is this more about them putting forth a front? You know, is this Major League Baseball putting forth a front? Okay, it's out now. Everyone knows it's out, and there are some players who are starting to get loud about it. We better pretend to do something here. Here's what we're going to do. 10 games, if we catch it, they'll catch a few guys here or there. And I think what they're hoping for is pitchers just get scared and they say, forget it, we're not going to use it. You know,
right.
Like, it's
King
not
Daddy
worth it.
King Daddy Topper, though, was 10 days with pay.
With pay. With pay. Because yeah. They know the PA won't put up with it. The Players Association will fight it, won't accept it. You'd have to negotiate it if money's involved. This one, you don't. You know, you can just run it through. But we'll see, because a lot of the big arms, like Garrett Cole, Trevor Bauer's at the forefront. Like, everyone knows Bauer's been doing something. Right, and the Dodgers just paid him like $40 million a year, highest paid player in history per year.
But he's a big guy. He's always been saying, "Dog, check whatever. I don't do anything."
Of course he does. But his spin rate is off the charts. And what if he was getting some sort of an advantage, which is completely hypothetical at this point?
Just goes in the tank right now.
And what if he's just not? Even if he doesn't go in the tank, but he just takes a big step back. You're paying the guy $40 million,
right.
And all of a sudden he's got a 3.75 ERA instead of 2.75.
Yeah.
You know, like that's a significant jump.
It is.
Still a good pitcher, good arm, but not $40 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Armstrong still to come. Confirm or deny in about 15. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, game two tonight. Islanders at Tampa take it on the Lightning, and the playoff faceoff is presented by Lay's Flavor Faceoff, and it is time now for the Lay's playoff faceoff. Lay's is facing off against Ruffles All Dressed, Doritos Sweet Chili Heat, and Smart Food White Cheddar with their three new potato chip flavors available for a limited time. And when Tampa's back has been up against the wall the last couple of years, I look at the big boys. I look at Braden Point, Kucherov, Stamkos coming off a pretty ugly game in game one. Hedman tonight, Vasilevsky, those five
right.
In particular, those are their superstars. Those are their studs. Those five up against Barry Trotz and the Islanders Army and what you know they're going to try to throw at them. What do you like and why tonight?
Well, I like Tampa, just the response. And I talked about Montreal's adjustments and what I'm looking forward to see if they can do anything in game two against Vegas. Well, it's going to be Tampa's adjustments against the New York Islanders system, because if Tampa thinks they're going to play like the Islanders, the Islanders will dummy them, because that's all they do is play that certain way. So it'd be interesting to see what Coop has up his sleeve, because Coop's an elite coach, and I think he'll have his team dialed in and try and ramp up their speed and skill to see if the Islanders can handle that.
John Cooper said after the game, we have a recipe. We did not follow the instructions properly, and I think that they will get the instructions and follow it properly. They have no choice. I mean, they got to get this one. You don't want to be going back to the island and down 2-0. So I think they're big boys, and they're tested now, Jamie. I think they understand that they won the cup. They know what to do, and they understand the importance of this.
Yeah, it's a big one, man. I mean, they've been through the ringer. They did it last year. They've done it earlier in these playoffs, and I expect a big response out of them tonight. And honestly, it's been pretty consistent. Four rounds last year, two this year. That's six rounds in a row that when in doubt, Braden Point, Kucherov, like they are just lights out. And the Islanders are a different beast, but it's not like they haven't played a team that's well-structured and that defends well. They've done it before.
Right.
And I expect they'll do it again. I think they break out tonight. I think it's 1-1 going back to New York. Final hour coming up. Confirm and deny still to come. Jack Armstrong still to come. More on the Jays, more on MLB and their new rules. Recapping Game 1 Vegas Habs last night. And a report out there about Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka, what might or might not have happened at the U.S. Open this week. We'll get into that as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1, powered by Rust-Oleum, home of trusted quality and powerful solutions since 1921. From fabric paint to roof repair, epoxy floor coatings, rust-fighting paint, and more, Rust-Oleum has a solution for every challenge.